think back to the heyday of post-punk New York in the 1980s. The Mud Club and CBGBs were just getting started, and so was a band called Sonic Youth. Now, Sonic Youth had a kind of magic to it. It was indie before that was a thing, grunge before anyone had heard of grunge, let alone Seattle. The band's founders, Kim Gordon and Thurston Moore, were magical too. They were married, they had a baby girl. For 27 years, they had what looked like a perfect rock star marriage. And then in 2011, they split. Now, Kim Gordon has written a frank memoir about the early days of Sonic Youth and the dissolution of her marriage. It's called Girl in a Band. Here's a bit from the audiobook.
It was a strange place for things to come to an end. Over the years, we had played lots of rock festivals. The band saw them as a necessary evil, although the do-or-die aspect of having no sound check before you played made them sort of thrilling, too. Festivals mean backstage trailers and tents, gear and power cords everywhere, smelly porta-potties, and sometimes running into musicians whom you like personally or professionally but never get to see or meet or talk to. Equipment can break, delays happen, the weather is unpredictable. There are times you can't hear a thing in the monitors, but you just go for it and try to get the music across to a sea of people. Festivals also mean a shorter set. Tonight we would close things out with 70 minutes of adrenaline, just as we had done the past few days at festivals in Peru, Uruguay, Buenos Aires, and Chile. What was different from past tours and festivals was that Thurston and I weren't speaking to each other. We had exchanged maybe 15 words all week. After 27 years of marriage, things had fallen apart between us. In August, I'd had to ask him to move out of our house in Massachusetts, and he had. He was renting an apartment a mile away and commuting back and forth to New York. The couple everyone believed was golden and normal and eternally intact, who gave younger musicians hope they could outlast a crazy rock and roll world, was now just another cliche of middle-aged relationship failure. A male midlife crisis, another woman, a double life.
Kim Gordon's new memoir is called Girl in a Band. Doug Gordon caught up with her.
Kim, you moved from California to New York City to pursue your art career in 1980. And when you were there, you met a fellow artist named Dan Graham. How did he help you with your art career?
Yeah, I had met Dan in L.A. through another artist before I came out. He kind of actually told me to go to certain clubs or art spaces where music was going on. That was interesting, like a lot of no-wave bands or people like Glenn Branca and Rhys Chatham. Also, he encouraged me to write. There was this magazine called Real Life Magazine, which Tom Lawson put out, and he suggested to Tom that I write something. So I wrote an essay about Rhys Chatham's guitar trio piece called Trash, Drugs, and Male Bonding. But it was a way for me to have a presence in the art world without having a show or a gallery. Galleries weren't that accessible.
And as you write in Girl in a Band, writing this essay really unlocked the next 30 years of your life. Can you tell me how it did that?
Well, I don't know. I was kind of really interested in music, aside from the short stint in art school where I had a sort of a noise garage band that we formed for class. It seemed a little bit beyond me. But there was a lot going on that was very much about playing free and creatively and not conventional music. Dan was writing articles about feminism and girl bands, and I thought it just kind of took a perverse pleasure in kind of describing men playing music.
Yeah, and there was a little more to it than that, wasn't there? You were writing about how in male relationships there always had to be some sort of third thing that would create intimacy, like music or video games or golf or women. Can you talk a bit about that?
Oh, you mean just about sort of parallel play or how men bonded in that way?
And, right, because that's what the essay was about, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was kind of like it had a homoerotic overtones, I suppose, if you read in between the lines. I was also influenced by this writer, Rocrier, who was a kind of minimal writer.
Oh, Elaine Rocrier. Interesting. You did reference him in the book because I read the whole book, but I didn't know. Yeah, because I went through this huge Robespierre phase because his novels.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his novels were so weird. He was trying to create this new novel, and his novels, a lot of them, didn't really focus on people, did they? They would just focus on descriptions of things.
Right.
They were very visually oriented. That's interesting.
Yeah, and in art school, I had done these pieces that were called Proposals for Stories, which were just short descriptions of like an event or something. So it was, in a way, my writing style kind of grew out from that, and I carried that over into this piece.
Sonic Youth's debut album, Confusion is Sex, was released in 1982, and one of the songs on that album is called Shaking Hell. Can you tell me about Shaking Hell?
The lyrics were inspired by this Dan's interest, actually, in the Shakers. He started making a film called Rock My Religion. They were a sort of a utopian cult religion that would do this kind of trance dance in a spiral, and they could sort of work themselves into a frenzy. But otherwise, the religion was very sexually strict. Like, I think men and women entered in and out of different doors. But in this trance dance, it was kind of more of an ecstatic experience, I guess. And then I was also reading Mystery Train by Grell Marcus and was just reading some of his essays. So I just kind of decided to use the word shake and shaking hell. And then the rest of the song was about women's images put together by men or things like that.
Yeah, you'd been reading Julie Kristeva's essays about the male gaze, right? That was an influence on the song?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You say that the need to be a woman out in front never really entered your mind until Sonic Youth signed with a major label, Geffen Records, in 1990. That's surprising. Why did it take that long?
The way I wrote it in the book, it makes it seem like it all happened like that, but it didn't. You know, when the band first started out, I think Thurston was in the center of the stage, but probably very quickly after that, that changed, mostly for like sound logistics or something. I don't really remember. But so when I said that in the book, I didn't really mean that literally, but I just meant that in terms of the band having a higher profile, different opportunities opened up, or just people asking me to be in photo shoots, things like that, in more mainstream or, you know, spin or something. And at the same time, I'd gotten more interested in fashion, and I was doing the X-Girl line, and so I had to do all these interviews and photo shoots for that. You know, Sonic Youth is a very democratic band. I was very aware of not wanting to be this power couple. We tried to keep it as balanced as possible. But, you know, there are often photo shoots where they would want to put me in the front. Literally, I remember doing this one during the Dirty era with Stephen Klein, and he would literally was like, telling, you know, like pushing his hand, can you move over? You know, it was like Steve felt like he was literally being pushed out of the picture. It was the most awkward and horrible photo shoot I've ever been in. Mm. And then they actually left because they were so pissed off. And I felt like weirdly somehow responsible, or like that I had to sort of keep going because there was all this, a certain amount of pressure, you know, because it was an important photo shoot, or I don't know. It was just like for Interview Magazine. And it was very stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. The 80s and the 90s could be very harsh for women, yet you always seem to float above it. How did you manage to do that?
Well, in what way harsh?
In terms of the way they were treated, the way the media would portray them, along the lines of what you were saying about the photo shoot, about the women front and center, the sexism and that kind of thing.
Well, I guess in the mainstream, yeah. I mean, there weren't that many women in the 80s. In indie rock, or the hardcore scene especially. We were always aware that the mainstream was more, yeah, sexist in that way. People like Madonna were really smart about how they used that and sort of playful with it. And certainly Debbie Harry had been super funny and ironic with her image, and she had so much humor. There weren't that many women in the mainstream who used, I mean, I guess Madonna was humorous, kind of camp and campy.
Yeah. You have this great description of the conceptual artist Barbara Kruger, who, of course, is famous for the way she combined black and white photos and captions like, "Your body is a battleground and I shot, therefore I am." You describe Kruger's art as being all about blowtorching cliches, and that's a great phrase. And so I'm curious, do you think your art, and maybe to a certain extent your music, is also about blowtorching cliches?
No. She was dealing really in a focused way about that. I don't think my work is very obvious about what it is.
And you probably like it that way. Has writing Girl in a Band changed the way you think about your life and your art?
I suppose in a way it's brought me, in a way, back to who I am, as something very traumatic that happened that set off this whole chain of events. It also made me think about how I got to where I am. And instead of kind of not really facing or wanting to accept who I am, and it kind of made me do that. When you write it down, it makes it all very pretty concrete, even though there is still a lot of subtextual or read between the lines things. In a way, it did help me just feel like the same person I've been my whole life.
Kim Gordon talking about her memoir, Girl in a Band, with Doug Gordon. And this is music from Kim's new experimental electric guitar duo, Body Head.